Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
As a longtime foreign correspondent, I've worked in lots of places, but nowhere as important to the world as China. I'm Jane Perlez, former Beijing bureau chief for The New York Times. Join me on my new podcast, Face Off, U.S. versus China, where I'll take you behind the scenes in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. Find Face Off wherever you get your podcasts.
It was a warm summer evening in the sleepy little town of Mattoon, Illinois. The year was 1944. FDR was president and the war in the Pacific was raging. That night in Mattoon, many residents left their windows open in order to let in the night breeze, and so that they could fall asleep to the sounds of crickets chirping in the night. On August 31st, a Mattoon resident named Urban Rafe awoke in the middle of the night feeling ill. All around him, the air inside his bedroom reeked with a pungent, sickly sweet aroma. This odor was so strong that it made his eyes water and his lips swell. It also made him feel very nauseous. Urban barely had time to stumble his way back to the bathroom where he threw up. As he came back to the bedroom, he tried to wake his wife to see if she was okay. Urban's wife opened her eyes and she too immediately began gagging. Urban asked her if she had left the gas on, but when his wife tried to get up to check, she found she was unable to move. She tried to lift herself up, only her arms and legs didn't work. She felt paralyzed. Urban grabbed his wife and began desperately shaking her, trying to get her to move, but she couldn't. This wasn't the only such strange incident that would be reported in short order. The following night, Aline Kearney and her sister Martha were in the kitchen of Aline's home getting ready to settle down for the night. Aline went to put her three-year-old daughter, Doris, to bed. She opened the window in Doris's bedroom to let the cool night air in. Mattoon was a small town and most people felt safe there. But immediately after opening the window, Aline began to notice a sickeningly sweet odor began to permeate the bedroom. At first, Aline thought it was just the smell of summer flowers wafting in the night air. In fact, some residents would go on to refer to this aroma as gardenia gas. But as the smell grew stronger, Aline grew increasingly frightened. Her throat began to constrict, and her legs and lower extremities began to go numb. Aline managed to let out a gagging scream that caused her sister Martha to come rushing to her assistance. As Martha stepped into the room, she too was hit with that same sickly sweet stench. Aline told Martha to grab Doris and get out of the house. Martha did as she was told. She picked up her young niece and ran out of the house looking for help. Meanwhile, Aline couldn't move. She just lay there on the bedroom floor trying to will her legs to work again. As she lay there in the dark, she peered up at the open window and saw something else terrifying. There was a shadowy figure standing there, watching her. Only Aline couldn't do anything about it. Martha ran to the next-door neighbor's house, and he phoned the police. Officers arrived on the scene a short while later, but by the time they got there and looked around, they found nothing out of the ordinary. Aline's husband, Bert, who worked as a late-night taxi driver, heard about what happened to his wife. He rushed home and later reported that as he got close to his house, he spotted a strange man standing in their yard, looking up at their bedroom window. Bert described the man as tall, dressed in dark clothing, and wearing a tight-fitting cap. Bert shouted at the man, asking him what he was doing. The man immediately turned and fled. Bert tried chasing after him, but the prowler vanished into the night. These events were the very first such incidents reported in the town of Mattoon. Over the next 2 weeks, several Mattoon residents would report similar incidents of their homes being filled with noxious fumes that made them ill. According to many of the victims, they had all encountered a mysterious individual who has become known in history as the Mad Gasser of Mattoon. I'm Nate Hale, and do you smell something funny? And this is The Conspirators. That night, Urban Rafe and his wife told the police that they had been the victims of a bizarre gas attack that left them nauseous and partially paralyzed. But when the officers arrived on the scene, they claimed they couldn't smell anything. It turns out that at the time the supposed gas attack was going on, there was actually another couple who were staying with the Rafes. And they too reported nothing out of the ordinary happening to them. By the time the police arrived on the scene, the Rafes' symptoms had subsided as well. They consulted a doctor, and he had never heard of any sort of poison gas that could cause the sort of symptoms the Rafes reported. Ultimately, the doctor offered his opinion that the Rafes may have been suffering from a bout of food poisoning. The Mattoon police probably would have written the incident off as a figment of the Rafes' imagination. But less than 24 hours later, they got another call of a similar incident occurring at the home of Aline and Bert Kearney. By the time police got to the Kearney house, Aline had begun to recover. Bert had found his wife lying on their daughter's bedroom floor, unable to move. He carried her to the living room sofa. By the time the police arrived, the sensation in her limbs had begun to return. Aline told the police her frightening story, including seeing a shadow moving outside her daughter's bedroom window. Bert confirmed that he too had seen a prowler outside the home, and that he had chased the man off. Although the officers who reported to the scene were quick to realize this incident must be connected to the events reported by Urban Rafe and his wife the night before, the Mattoon Chief of Police, Eugene C. Cole, wasn't convinced. After all, this was Mattoon, Illinois, not the big city. Things like this didn't happen in places such as theirs. Despite the chief's skepticism, the department did their due diligence. Officers scoured the area around the Kearney home and found nothing. The fact that there was no evidence of either gas attack didn't help the claims made by the Kearneys or the Rafes. Yet at the same time, the police remained concerned there might be some sort of peeping Tom in the neighborhood. But these were just the first such reported incidents in Mattoon. Soon, the mysterious individual who had come to be known as the Phantom Anesthetist, or more commonly, the Mad Gasser, would step up his attacks and terrorize even more of the town's residents. The day after Aline Kearney's bizarre gas attack, two more families came forward reporting similar incidents. One such story came from a woman most reports just call Mrs. Ryder. Around midnight on September 1st, the mother of two claimed that her children fell mysteriously ill. As she took care of them, Mrs. Ryder claimed that her bedroom began to fill with a sickly sweet odor that caused a burning sensation in her throat. Even though her symptoms were mild, she still reported the incident to the police. That same evening, an anonymous woman reported that she too began to feel severely nauseous at around 1 a.m. Her symptoms persisted until dawn. As report after report kept coming in, the police were at a loss as to what was going on. One early theory was that a prowler was using chloroform on the town's residents. Chloroform is a chemical that you've probably seen used before in the movies. It's the knockout drug where you'll see someone dousing a rag in the liquid, then stuffing it over someone's mouth to make them pass out. In truth, chloroform doesn't work anywhere near as quickly as it does in the movies. It can take several minutes for the person breathing in the fumes to pass out. And if the attacker were to use too much of the chemical, it could actually kill someone. At the same time, it is true that small amounts of chloroform could actually cause feelings of nausea and weakness, similar to what was being reported in each gassing incident. But chloroform quickly evaporates and leaves few traces behind, making it difficult for police to confirm that this was indeed the cause of the attacks. At the same time, if chloroform was being used, this was at least something the police could go on because chloroform was a controlled substance, meaning any sales of the chemical could be traced. Mrs. Ryder didn't agree with the police, though. She knew what chloroform smelled like, and she didn't think that's what she encountered. Police attempted to keep all these reported incidents under wraps in order to prevent the public from panicking. But pretty soon, this story leaked to the local newspaper. After that, all hell broke loose. The Mattoon Daily Journal Gazette published a front-page story about the anesthetic prowler on the loose. Soon after, the mysterious individual became the talk of the town. But despite the press coverage and heightened public vigilance, the next few days passed with no more strange incidents being reported. The townspeople began to breathe a collective sigh of relief as it seemed that perhaps the mad gasser had either quit or moved on. Then on the following Tuesday night, Carl and Beulah Cordes returned home to find an unfamiliar wet rag lying on their front porch. Beulah picked up the rag and gave it a sniff. Immediately after, her entire body went numb and she collapsed. Carl bent down to help his wife back up, but then Beulah began to spit up blood. Carl was terrified. He ran to the phone to call a doctor. Meanwhile, Beulah's lips had gone swollen and blistered in a matter of seconds. But almost as quickly as the symptoms came on, they also began to subside. By the time a doctor got to the house, Beulah could stand once again. Her throat and lips were still burning, but she was otherwise okay. Police gathered up the rag and sent it to the Illinois State Police Laboratory for analysis. Hopefully, they'd be able to determine the chemical that was being used in the string of attacks. They searched the area surrounding the Cordes' home and discovered a couple of other pieces of potential evidence. They found a worn skeleton key and a mostly empty tube of lipstick in the Cordes' yard, neither of which belonged to the couple. Keep in mind, these could have been evidence or they could have just been trash that was dumped in the yard. But the presence of the lipstick tube did provide police an extra possibility that hadn't occurred to them before. At this time, they had been looking for a male suspect the entire time. But now they had to consider that perhaps the person they were looking for was actually female. Some of the witnesses did report seeing a mysterious woman in the area near some of the gas attacks. The skeleton key was another unusual clue. They tried it on all the locks in the Cordes' home, but it didn't work. Likewise, they went around the neighborhood and tried it on several of the neighbors' doors as well. The Cordes' weren't the only people who reported having a brush with a mad gasser that evening. Another local housewife reported that she had heard the sounds of someone outside her bedroom window. Shortly after, she was overcome by the strong smell of gas, which caused her legs to become temporarily paralyzed. At around midnight, another woman phoned police to report that a man tried to force his way in through her door. She managed to frighten him off with her screams. It's possible the incident had nothing to do with the stories of the phantom anesthetist. But when word got out about the incident, it only managed to increase the level of paranoia throughout the town. Public outcry quickly ratcheted up for the police to do something to stop the madman in their midst. Now, to be fair, the Mattoon police actually did make an arrest early on. The same night that Beulah Cordes collapsed after sniffing the strange rag found on her front porch, the police apprehended a young man lurking in an alley near the Cordes' home. This man claimed to be lost, but Police Chief Cole didn't buy his story, so they brought him into the station for further interrogation. But the man claimed he didn't know anything about the gas attacks and the officers were unable to tie him to any of the mysterious incidents. Eventually, the police were forced to let him go. By Friday, September 8th, the story of the mad gasser of Mattoon had become national news. This only stoked public fears on a much broader scale. Remember, this was at a time when World War II was raging. There was a perpetual fear that spread across the country that Hitler's forces would strike the continental United States. Rumors began to grow that what was happening in Mattoon was some sort of small-scale test of the Nazi chemical warfare program. Stories about the mad gasser of Mattoon caused a lot of people across the country to worry that the war overseas had finally reached American soil. Of course, this was all just wild speculation in the press. But it was enough to give a lot of Mattoon citizens even more sleepless nights. The townspeople began demanding that the police step up to protect their homes. They demanded additional patrol cars on the streets and more action be taken to capture the mad gasser. One story appeared in newspapers claiming that the city council allegedly held a secret meeting where the mayor offered a reward to capture the gasser. Although later on, both the mayor and city council members denied any such meeting took place. As the investigation ramped up, the police commissioner Thomas Wright turned to the Illinois Department of Public Safety for help. The state sent the Mattoon Police Department an additional 10 officers and 5 new police cars. There were even rumors that the FBI got involved and had agents on the ground investigating the claims. By the week of September 5th, the streets of Mattoon were empty. People began locking their doors and windows at night. Children weren't allowed to play outside unsupervised. By nightfall, Mattoon had become a veritable ghost town. But despite all this renewed action, the gas attacks not only continued, they escalated. On the night of September 6th, all hell broke loose as seven more gas attacks were reported across town. These included a restaurant manager named Laura Junkin, who claimed that after closing up for the night, she went back to her apartment at the back of the restaurant and was immediately overcome by fumes after leaving her windows open. She said that it smelled like a combination of rotten flowers and cheap perfume. She said that within a few seconds, she had collapsed to the floor, unable to move. Elsewhere, the parents of an 11-year-old girl named Glenda Hendershot said that their daughter awoke in the middle of the night feeling nauseous. The girl's parents claimed to have spotted a shadowy prowler lurking outside their daughter's bedroom window. The figure, they said, was tall and thin and completely dressed in black clothing. A September 8th newspaper article described the symptoms in each attack this way. Victims report that the first symptom is an electric shock which passes completely through the body. Later, nausea develops, followed by partial paralysis. They also suffered burned mouths and throats, and their faces become swollen. The fact that the police couldn't find any evidence in each incident didn't sit well with the public, though, who were demanding an arrest be made. The following Saturday, the locals formed a mass protest to show the police just how furious they were over the lack of progress in the investigation. By September 8th, armed citizens took matters into their own hands and were out patrolling the streets looking for the prowler. Yet despite the militia, on that very same night, yet another gas attack occurred. This time was a little different, though. A school principal later claimed to have heard a weird buzzing noise outside her bedroom window. Immediately after, she began to notice a strange blue vapor seeping into her room. This was the first time anyone claimed that the gas had a color to it. Everyone else said the gas had been invisible. Police Commissioner Thomas V. Wright tried to quell the public panic and asked for citizens to get a grip on themselves. Razzie did acknowledge the likelihood of there being a so-called gas maniac on the loose. He also voiced his belief that many of the reported attacks were nothing more than hysteria, and that fear of the gas man is entirely out of proportion to the relatively harmless gas he is spraying. Rumors about the mad gasser spiraled out of control from there. Some people said he was some sort of deranged lunatic, perhaps an eccentric inventor. Others believed it was the work of Nazi terrorists operating inside the United States. One local psychic even claimed she had a vision of the gasser being a Neanderthal-like ape man wielding a spray can.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Things took an even bigger turn the following night. That was when the biggest gas attack yet allegedly occurred. You'll find some reports claiming that a large group of people in the town square all encountered a cloud of the toxic gas descending down upon them. As many as 70 people, including several reporters, all reported being overcome with nausea and paralysis. A reporter asked Superintendent Richard Piper from the Illinois Department of Public Safety to comment on the incident. He offered his speculation that the perpetrator must have been both brilliant and insane to have pulled off such an audacious series of attacks. This only further inflamed the citizens of Mattoon. Pretty soon they were calling for the resignation of Police Chief Cole. It didn't help his prospects for keeping his job after the lab results came in for the mysterious rag discovered by Beulah Cordes, and those results were inconclusive. The problem was the rag had been held in the police evidence locker for about 60 hours before it was given to the lab for testing, and it's possible that any chemical on it may have evaporated before analysis. Meanwhile, the mad gassers staged yet another bigger and bolder attack. One place that was considered a safe haven was the town's movie theater. Here was somewhere you could go and watch the flickering lights and the silver screen and get your mind off the world's troubles for a little while. But as the crowd sat in the dark, one female patron began to smell something sickly sweet, vaguely like perfume. As the smell became stronger, the woman began to panic. Her heartbeat began to race. Fear gripped her. What had she been thinking? What had any of them been thinking? Of course the mad gasser would try to strike in a crowded movie theater. The woman started to scream for help. Everyone needed to get out right now. At that point, mass chaos erupted. Everyone began to panic and shout throughout the theater. The crowd got up from their seats and stampeded for the exits. Later on, the woman who originally smelled the gas checked herself into the hospital. Only the doctors who examined her noticed something different about her. She hadn't experienced the same symptoms everyone else had in the gas attacks. Eventually, they diagnosed her from suffering an anxiety attack. The best guess anyone had was that the woman probably smelled someone's strong perfume and freaked out. This turned out to be the final straw for the police. The next day, Police Chief Cole, who was still at risk of losing his job, announced that his department would no longer be taking any more mad gasser reports, unless there was hard evidence to back it up. He insisted that anyone coming forward claiming to have suffered a gas attack undergo a medical evaluation. People needed to prove their symptoms were real, and they weren't just experiencing another panic attack. On top of that, he announced that anyone who didn't agree to these terms could face jail time. This led to an immediate drop in the number of calls coming in about the mad gasser. The woman who caused the panic in the movie theater became a public laughingstock. No one after that wanted to follow in her footsteps. This also led to a change in the attitude by many of the town leaders. Instead of the police attempting to apprehend a madman on the loose, it appears that the public had been suffering a wave of mass hysteria, and that there never was a mad gasser to begin with. Police Chief Cole said that he believed there never were any gas attacks at all, and that most of the reported incidents were simply the result of large quantities of carbon tetrachloride being produced by the nearby Atlas Imperial Diesel Engine Company, being carried by the wind. The plant supervisor vehemently denied these charges. He even reached out to a city health official who reported that this theory made no sense. The plant had safety measures in place to prevent the toxic gas from escaping the facility, and there was simply no evidence that they had a leak. Not to mention the plant workers would definitely have noticed if a leak had occurred. Today, one of the most commonly held beliefs about the mad gasser of Mattoon remains that the townspeople were suffering from what's referred to in the psychiatric journals as a mass psychogenic illness. We've talked about this sort of phenomena before. It's the idea that large groups of people can suffer from a shared delusion, born out of stressful situations and strong emotions, such as fear. This has been the go-to explanation for many incidents throughout history where large numbers of people all experience the same strange things. Public sentiment surrounding the mad gasser and whether he was real or not began to change swiftly. On December 3, 1944, an article in the newspaper supplement American Weekly quoted a so-called internationally known psychologist and lecturer named Donald A. Laird, who claimed that clearly the mad gasser was nothing more than a figment of everyone's imagination. He also made the rather sexist statement that, quote, "For some reason, women are more susceptible to mass suggestion than men." It should also be pointed out that Laird made all these declarations without once interviewing any witnesses or studying the attacks in any way. In 1945, the most influential study on the mad gasser of Mattoon would appear in the Journal of Abnormal and Social Psychology, written by Donald M. Johnson. He would eventually go on to a distinguished academic career in psychology. Although at the time his study was published, Johnson was still an undergraduate student whose formal professional education was probably still fairly limited. Even still, Johnson offered a scholarly-sounding explanation as to why he believed the mad gasser to be a case of mass hysteria, a common belief that holds true to this day. Although the story of the mad gasser of Mattoon is relatively well-known and still gets talked and written about today, one thing that's not so widely known is that it's not the first such incident reported in history. During the tail end of 1933 and into the early part of 1934, another similar incident was reported in Botetourt County, Virginia. On December 22, 1933, near Haymaker Town, Virginia, the Huffman family began reporting becoming overwhelmed by a powerful, noxious odor. At around 10 p.m., Mrs. Huffman began smelling something strange, and that made her feel nauseous. Pretty soon, the smell dissipated, and she and her children tried going to bed. Only the smell returned about 30 minutes later. Mrs. Huffman went next door to use her neighbor's phone to call the police. Officers arrived shortly after, but were unable to determine the source of the smell. They left at around midnight. However, about an hour later, the smell returned. This time, it affected all 8 family members. They all suffered from headaches, nausea, and difficulty breathing. The worst stricken was 20-year-old Alice Huffman. Doctors needed to use artificial respiration to revive her. 2 days later, on Christmas Eve, another family living in Cloverdale reported suffering from a variety of symptoms, including weakness, nausea, and burning eyes. At about 9 p.m., Clarence Hall, his wife and two children came home and immediately encountered a strange odor. Mr. Hall became weak enough so that he could barely stand. His wife was overwhelmed too, and was barely able to drag the two of them out of the house. The police were summoned. They consulted a doctor who noted that the gas, quote, tasted sweet with a trace of formaldehyde. Police investigated and found that a nail had been pulled from one of the windows. There was also a neighbor who reported seeing a stranger outside the home carrying a flashlight. Later on, Clarence Hall sent his family to stay with friends, while he gathered a group of neighbors who spent the remainder of the night searching for the mysterious prowler, only they found nothing. On December 27th, another incident occurred at the home of A.L. Kelly and his mother in Troutville, Virginia. Kelly told police he saw a mysterious man and woman driving back and forth in front of their home in a new model Chevrolet. A neighbor also spotted the vehicle and managed to get a partial license plate, but the police were unable to trace it. As stories ramped up in the newspapers about the attacks, so too did public panic begin to spread. Armed men began going out in the streets hunting the mysterious gasser. The Botetourt County Board of Supervisors offered a $500 reward for information leading to the gasser's arrest. But the attacks carried on. On January 10, 1934, Homer Hilton of Fincastle reported hearing mumbling voices outside his window right before someone tried to jimmy it open. One of Hilton's neighbors also confirmed hearing someone outside the home. On that same night, a man from Troutville named G.D. Kinsey also reported being attacked. On January 16th, F.B. Duval of Bonsack reported his own gas attack. According to reports, Duval ran from the house to use a phone and then saw a man run up to a parked car and speed away. Police searched the area and found a woman's shoe print near where the car had been parked. 3 days later, the gasser reportedly sprayed fumes into the Campbell home near Cloverdale. Mrs. Campbell told police that she was sitting inside when the window slid open and immediately after she began feeling nauseous. On January 21st, Howard Crawford and his wife were overwhelmed by gas inside their home. Then on January 22nd, three more attacks were reported throughout the area. One of these victims reported seeing a mysterious figure outside the home. The police immediately tried setting up roadblocks around the area, but this didn't lead anywhere either. Soon, these incidents led to a story in the New York Times. This spurred the Virginia State Assembly to pass a bill that called for a maximum prison sentence of 10 years for anyone convicted of pumping toxic gases into public or private places. And if the incident was shown to cause injury, this could lead to a maximum punishment of up to 20 years in prison. On January 25th, the gasser was allegedly chased off by a man named Chester Snyder, who ran outside with his shotgun and fired a warning shot at him. Although reports of the attacks continued, by January 30th, once again, many officials began believing many of these incidents were nothing but a figment of the imagination. It's known that at least one reported gas attack turned out to be nothing but a faulty coal stove. Another gas attack was reported inside the home of A.P. Scraggs on February 3rd, causing the man's entire family to suffer nausea and convulsions. This led to further public hysteria, with as many as 20 more reports coming in from nearby Roanoke County, as well as several others in Lexington, 30 miles away. While some of these attacks may have been legitimate, most of them didn't follow the pattern of the earlier attacks and lacked a lot of details. Many in the area came to believe that many of the attacks were caused by normal household occurrences, such as faulty chimney flues. Pretty soon, authorities began putting out press releases claiming the gasser didn't exist and that the panic was being spread by out-of-control rumors. Lacking any tangible evidence of a mad gasser being on the loose, the Roanoke Times published an editorial declaring the entire incident to be fake. It's easy to see why so many people have come to believe that the mad gasser of Mattoon was a figment of the imagination as well. Throughout history, there have been a number of other reported gas attacks that may or may not have really occurred. One of the last reported such attacks occurred in a Houston, Texas church on Christmas Day in 1961. On that occasion, several members of the congregation reported smelling a sickly sweet odor that made them temporarily ill. But in that case, like a lot of the others, there's little evidence that the gas was real, and just as easily could have been another case of mass psychogenic illness. It wouldn't be until 2003 when someone came up with an alternative theory that not only was the mad gasser of Mattoon real, but even identified the culprit by name as well. Scott Maruna is a Jacksonville, Illinois high school chemistry teacher who grew up near Mattoon. In 2003, he published a book titled The Mad Gasser of Mattoon: Dispelling the Hysteria. in which he identifies the Mad Gasser as being a former chemistry student named Farley Llewellyn. Maruna makes a compelling case that Llewellyn was the Mad Gasser. At the time of the attacks, Llewellyn was living a reclusive life inside a trailer where he kept a small laboratory. He had previously been a chemistry major at the University of Illinois. Maruna claimed that Llewellyn held a grudge against the town and set about playing a prank. He claims that Farley Llewellyn used a nitromethane gas he had been able to synthesize in order to frighten residents. He also claims that Llewellyn had assistance from his sisters, which could account for some of the reports that a mysterious female prowler was sighted near some of the attacks. It turns out that even the police suspected Llewellyn at the time the attacks were going on. The man was taken into custody and placed in a mental institution on September 10th, right around the same time the reports of gas attacks pretty much stopped. Although a few more gas attacks were reported after that date, Scott Maruna believes that Llewellyn's sisters may have attempted to carry on gassing people in order to deflect suspicion away from their brother. According to Maruna, Farley Llewellyn was the only person the Mattoon police ever seriously looked at as a suspect, and it's easy to see why. The man had the technical know-how to pull off these attacks. He was also tall and thin, and fit the general description given by witnesses of the mysterious prowler seen around town. In 2004, British writer Jonathan Downs visited Mattoon and came away convinced that Farley Llewellyn was the Mad Gasser. He visited numerous shops and spoke to a number of elderly residents of the community, all of whom confirmed that at the time, pretty much everyone believed it was Farley. It was only because Llewellyn came from a well-respected family that many people decided to overlook the one black sheep and decided to protect the family's reputation. But now, more than 50 years later, it seemed like the older residents were a lot more open with their belief that the Mad Gasser of Mattoon really was Farley Llewellyn. And yet, despite a common belief among the locals that Farley Llewellyn was the Mad Gasser of Mattoon, we'll likely never know the truth, because the man is long dead, taking whatever secrets he had with him to the grave. The Conspirators is written and produced by me, Nate Hale, an entirely fictional identity. Thanks so much for listening. I have a new Patreon supporter to thank. Thank you to Josh for signing up and helping support the show. Just a reminder, the patrons of the show get access to all sorts of nifty bonuses, including stickers, magnets, t-shirts, and our ever-growing library of bonus mini-episodes, the latest of which should be dropping right around the same time this episode does. It's a story out of Halifax, England that bears some interesting connections to the story of the Mad Gasser of Mattoon. I hope you'll check it out. If you're interested in becoming a patron of the show, I'll put a link in the show notes. Another great way you can help support the show is to subscribe and give us a 5-star review wherever you get your podcast. Currently we're on Apple, Spotify, and pretty much everywhere else across the podcasting multiverse. Besides that, you can find us on our Facebook page, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube. Check us out on those last few and you'll be able to see some of the cool short-form videos we made that cover a lot of the same sorts of topics we do on this podcast. We also have a website, theconspiratorspodcast.com, where you can listen to our back catalog of shows. I also encourage you to email us at theconspiratorspodcast@gmail.com and let us know how we're doing. You can even send us episode suggestions. I love to hear from you. Thanks again for listening, and I hope you'll be back next time.
All you need is a few minutes to start your day off with something historic when you listen to the This Day in History podcast. Every day, there's a new episode for you to listen and learn about what happened that day way back when. So listen and subscribe to This Day in History wherever you get your podcasts. That's This Day in History wherever you get your podcasts.